My roadmaps are really simple. So what is visible on this roadmap, the first thing is that there are no deliverables, there are product outcomes. Product outcomes might be OKR that we get for the product team. And below this, there are customer needs or customer outcomes. So we have product outcomes at the top that will drive the business results and customer needs that we are going to address. OKRs create focus to explain why what we are going to do is important and also define how we will measure the success and what the success means. The problem with Gantt chart is that it's often used to create a fiction that we have control, very detailed level, granular control over the future. And making commitment just because you are pressure, or making details, plans, and with dates and different deliverables, it feels safe, but in most cases, it causes much bigger problems in the future. It's just a wise thing to do and not to make those commitments. Having a constraint like a deadline provokes creativity so that we start thinking, okay, how we can achieve this goal, what we can do, and start engaging in the discussions.
Hi, I'm Maria, and this is the Agile State of Mind. Welcome to a Serious Scrum interview series where I interview my colleagues from Serious Scrum and we talk all things Scrum and Agile. Today, I have with me one of my product management gurus, Pavel Hurin. Hey, Pavel.
Hi, thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome. I'm probably one of the few people who can pronounce your name, right?
That's possible.
Yeah, Pavel is also from Poland and he's actually living in Warsaw, right?
Right.
Pavel shares tips and insights on product management and you can find him on Substack and on LinkedIn. Check the description for the links. And today I invited Pavel to talk about roadmaps. And that's a topic that I am very passionate about because I am now having some struggles on that. Today we'll talk everything roadmap. Roadmaps, Gantt charts, what formats we use, what tools do you use, how deadlines work with the roadmaps and the quarterly or the horizon. What are the horizons of the roadmaps that you would say are the best? Let's see where the talk takes us. So I would like to first ask you, what do we need to get started? What format would you recommend, tools to use?
I think in order to get started, we probably need to know where we are, we want to go. So mm-hmm. In some overarching vision of our product, we need a strategy, what we do, what we don't do, what choices we are going to make when working with the product. And I like to work with the goals in Scrum's product goal. It might be an OKR that defines some outcomes that we can measure. And this is the base for a roadmap for me.
Okay. And if you do OKRs, which are very popular right now, right? Everybody does OKRs, apparently. So what is the cadence usually? How do you do them? Could you just briefly say before we go to the roadmaps?
Yeah, maybe I can tell how it should be done. It's okay. Done a little bit different in my company. But how it should be done is that if you read Radical Focus by Christina Wodke, she argues that you should have only one OKR. So one OKR for the whole company. If the company has a multiple business models, you can have more than one. And then the OKRs for the teams should be derived, for the departments should be derived from this primary top goal, top OKR. Mm-hmm. We plan them quarterly. So every quarter, there is a conversation about what's the most important for the company. If there are more initiatives, because not everything can be done in one quarter, we split them and sequence like in a backlog so that we can mm-hmm. tackle one goal after another. For me, they are a way to create focus on what is important for the long-term strategy, for the things that are not urgent. So it's not a fire that just started, but something we would like to focus on. So OKRs create focus to explain why what we are going to do is important and also define how we will measure the success and what the success means, which are key results.
Okay, I would love to go into that because that's also something that I sometimes struggle, sometimes not, depending on what the OKRs actually are. You know, it's hard to have mm-hmm. them really outcome focused. I saw so many OKRs that were basically tasks.
Yeah, it happens quite often when people convert key results into OKRs for on the lower level, and this is not how it should work.
So, yeah. But that's also, you know, we have, I think as humans, somehow we have a problem to structure a goal that's like outcome based, as opposed to just do this, complete this task, finish the work on whatever initiative there is. And people really struggle to put it as something, okay, what do you want to achieve? How can we achieve it? Because if you say complete, what does it actually mean? Like, you know, so that's why I have a lot of how, but maybe that's for another conversation. So let's say somehow we have the perfect OKRs in our company. You know, given that there are some other departments that depend on the usually the engineering work. So we have marketing and we have operations. They need to contact the clients. They need to tell them something like, yeah, you know, we are preparing this big marketing splash for March. How can we make sure that we actually deliver by March? So I would like to understand, what's your horizon for a roadmap?
I usually try to use now Nextlighter roadmap. So for me now is what we are working in the current quarter. The next is the next quarter, and later it's everything else. So, but I have never seen a detailed plan. So you also mentioned Maria, Gantt charts. I have never seen a detailed plan longer than one quarter. That's to the test of time. So usually those plans are 1 week after we define them, they are obsolete. So,
yeah, I read your article, 5 tips for PMs that will make working with deadlines a breeze, which I love the title. I will also link the article in the description. And you write it there that it's like hard to have, but I'm actually happy that you mentioned that a quarter is still okay, you know, because I was like afraid, oh my God, will that make, a quarter is a lot already, right? But at least we have some kind of a plan in place.
Yeah, I know that you interview also other people from Serious Scrum community, and one of them is probably, I don't know if you will be talking to him, Fredrik Karlsson. And he wrote some time ago an article about the deadline as an enabling constraint. So I think as long we do not define the exact output features that we want to have in this quarter, but we have a goal, and the team is empowered to find the way how to achieve this goal, this outcome that we care about. So having a constraint like a deadline might provoke creativity, so that we start thinking, okay, how we can achieve this goal, how we can, what we can do, and people start engaging in the discussions. Yeah, from my experience, if we have the goal that is, it's not detailed, you do not have exact outcomes, exact outputs, but you, for example, say that we want to increase customer engagement or customer satisfaction score by 20%. This is something that you can work on during the quarter, and you can always also use it as a as your product goal for this quarter. For me, this is perfectly fine, as long as we talk about outcomes, and as long as we do not focus on this task that people have to do.
I understand that. And I was thinking about it. Like, yeah, if you have an app that you yourself can use and all the developers can use, and you want to empower the team and tell them, we want to increase the engagement by 30%, right? And we are like, oh yeah, I know, because I know the app, it's easy for me to think about ways to do it. But if we have a product that's more complex and it's really hard for a PM to get a hold of the problem, and you need marketing input, you need ops input, because people just don't use it on their own, because it's a let's say it's a retail thing, you know, you don't use it because it's for the retailers, it's not even for the end user. So you need to really understand how they work, how the marketeers work, and so on. It's really hard to just give people this outcome and give and let them find the way. So sometimes you are forced to create stories for them. And
sorry, but who is you
I would say like the management, the company? Or some like management. So basically I think it's you. Like the PM needs to
product manager.
Yeah, usually it's in their hands. Of course they work with a UXer to do some kind of research, they work with the other stakeholders to understand, but they bring what will be done.
I don't like this notion that the product manager is possible for defining product backlog items, and that he defines what needs to be done. I really like product discovery as defined on Teresa Torres or Matti Kagan, where we have this product trio, so product manager, engineer, and designer work together to find out when we have this high-level goal, to find out how we can to discover what are the customer needs that we can address, and what are the how can we solve those problems, and what are the assumptions that we can test before selecting anything for the implementation. So of course there are other departments like marketing, like customer success, like sales, and this is product manager job to engage with them and make sure that the what you are developing works for different part of the business. I wouldn't say that the product manager defines what needs to be done alone. This is the team effort.
Okay, I like that one. So it's Marty Kagan that we can learn more about the way that you have this product trio that work together to make sure that we discover what should be done, right? So then how do you do it? Could you give a timeline of how things work? So when you start discovering until you get to like a moment that you can share the roadmap with the people for the quarter, how does that work?
Those topics are definitely connected, because product discovery allows us to create a roadmap if we need one. So if we use now, next, later product roadmap, it's not a problem. But if we have some correlation with the quarters, like this quarter, next quarter, or two quarter from now, you really need and add some dates on this roadmap. I don't really like, but there are sometimes organization demands them. So the most important rule for me is not to make those commitments too soon. So we need to work with, as you said, the product trio, so designer, engineer, and product manager, to find out how we can achieve this outcome, if it is possible to achieve it, because maybe it's there is nothing we can do, and this might also be an outcome of the product discovery. And as part of product discovery, we want to address the high risk assumptions. So we want to identify problems, think about solutions, and think what can go wrong in terms of value for the customer, what works for the company, what is technically possible, even some ethical considerations. After conducting experiments, those high risk assumptions should be validated, either proved or disproved, and then we can make what Marty Kagan's called high integrity commitments. So it means that our product backlog items are validated and we more or less know what should be done. Of course, there might be some surprises, but the risk is much lower compared to having a bunch of product backlog items and just selecting them for implementation, just to find out that most of them doesn't work.
If I could reduces this risk. Stop you for a moment. So how do you go from high risk assumptions to something that you already validated? How do you validate that?
There are many techniques you can use, and this is, for some people in Scrum, this is controversial, but I think that learning by delivering things, because we need to understand that most of the ideas do not work. So even if we have a very strong feeling about what we have proposed and we think that it's a good solution, in most of the cases, there is something that caused this idea to be wrong. Learning by taking them for the sprint and delivering production ready increment and testing if the stakeholders are deploying on production and then measuring the outcomes. This is quite expensive way to work. So we run these experiments for the idea, for the high risk assumptions that we have identified. And there are many techniques you can use. One of them is by using user prototypes. So we can use tools like Balsamiq. You can also create high fidelity user prototypes like Figma. It depends on the risk, because if we want to validate some assumptions regarding what is technically feasible, like if we can create an algorithm or integrate with another system, we might decide to have a spike or create, as Marty Kagan defines it, feasibility prototype. And also, another way to test our ideas is to develop some smart part of the application, but not something that can go to production. And also Marty calls it live data prototypes. We can use it in A/B testing or in opt-in testing.
There is a lot of like theory for me about how, this is so great, we can test it. But then it takes time and it takes also some budget because you need to go and find focus group or people that will actually present this. Or you have beta customers that you actually have good relationship with. The world depends. Anyway, it takes time. How do you do it usually?
Of course, it takes time, but it takes much less time than delivering things and then verifying if they are working. So I think that product discovery, some say that it's like 10% of the delivery work. I think it's more like 20%. The cost is still much lower compared to delivering things. And actually, you don't have to find time because the time you save on the delivery, this is you save more than you need to invest.
So how do you make sure that you have stuff ready and discovered by the given day?
Yeah, it's maybe one of the common misunderstandings is that you do discovery only in front, do the discovery for the whole goal, and then the team starts implementing them, implementing things that you have discovered. It doesn't work like this. In most cases, you might make some high-level discovery at the beginning, but then you perform continuous product discovery on a weekly basis. So you talk to customers every week, you map opportunities every week, you map, you test assumptions every week. So this is an ongoing activity, not something that you just run before a set of sprints.
And then don't you have this problem that the developers say, if I don't see that Figma very well defined, I don't know how to start, so I can't start.
I think that we shouldn't start working on the things that are not validated, on ideas that are not validated. And if this is the case, something is wrong with the organization. And Figma, it's not only the question of running experiments, but also the UX that should be done upfront development. Because if we start with developing an idea and make some functionality, and then we ask designer to make this prettier, this is already too late. The usability will, in most cases, not be optimal or will just suck. And the design work must be done before the implementation. There are two topics mixed here. I wouldn't also recommend to run development without discovery. Of course, you can do that, but then you risk that a lot of work that you do will be wasteful and there will be a lot of rework required after every sprint.
But going back to, so we have the discovery phase pretty laid out. We understand that we need to validate before we actually do it. And you do it, as you say, like on a continuous basis. So basically you talk to clients frequently. And once you have something that you know that will be probably worked on, what happens? How do you create like a roadmap?
So usually products that I recently worked on, the roadmap was not something that I did once in a while, but it was an ongoing activity to, to update the roadmap, because the roadmap is
a living,
it's really the way to
artifact.
you can use this Scrum terms. It's a living artifact, and it shows. So the good roadmap can tell the stakeholders and the organization what is important and what is less important, what is our focus, and what outcomes we would like to achieve. So this is something that I worked on and update regularly, the outcome, because there are those outcomes that we care about that might be key results, but also you need to present some high-level goals on the roadmap. So the why that will inspire people and explain why the work we are doing in this quarter is important and how it is connected to the long-term vision for the product or for the organization. You really don't present it on the roadmap. The roadmap should explain how it will create value for the customers, how it will create value for the business. So this is, I treat it as a communication tool. It's not something that you do just that before some important presentation. Maria, you asked about tools, and to be honest, I don't use any specific tools, so I have some. Because a roadmap is a simple artifact. This is, if you...
I would like to see your roadmap, because, you know, whenever I imagine a roadmap, I see a Gantt chart, a timeline, and like, this goes until here, those two sprints, and this goes until there.
There is nothing wrong with with identifying dependencies between the work that you need to do. And but the problem with Gantt chart is that it's often used to create a fiction that we have control over the very detailed level, granular control over the future. And so it doesn't bring any clarity. And it's, for me, it's just a product management tool.
I like that you say it's a fiction, because I think what happens in this world of Gantt charts, well, Gantt charts, you know, even in Jira right now, you can use this roadmap of epics, you know, that you can just drag them. But what happens is that what we now need with this is what you say. It's like, how do we know that something changed? And people start like overly controlling, okay, this changed and what now? And this should be somewhere written, and this we should talk about this. It's changed again. And what now? And you know, and you start losing control of, okay, we don't know anymore when this will be done. It's hard to accept this uncertainty.
I agree that it's not comfortable to not to have control over the future, but pretending that we have this control, it might only make those problems worse, because the problems accumulate. People think that we are safe, we have a plan, we have this Gantt chart, and we exactly know when it will happen, and then we when it is not the case, the problems appears. Of course, people might press, and they might demand detailed plans. But if you agree to do this, you just create a bigger problem for yourself and for your team in the future. So it doesn't solve the problem. It just moves it into the future. So if you are going to leave a company in 3 months, maybe it might be an idea to. But in other cases, it doesn't help really.
Hey, I'm planning to leave the company, so I will create a roadmap for you for 3 months.
My roadmaps are really simple. And
yeah, do you have like an example one? I would like that to show it, because I think it will help understand what is the alternative for a Gantt chart. So could you explain a little bit?
So what is visible on this roadmap? The first thing is that there are no deliverables. There are product outcomes. So those are outcomes that we can influence, like increasing customer satisfaction and increasing activation rate. Product outcomes might be OKR that we get for the product team. Okay. Also, there are some ways how we will, what the increasing customer satisfaction means, like increasing NPS or referrals 20%. And below this, there are customer needs or customer outcomes. So we have product outcomes at the top that will drive the business results, and customer needs that we are going to address. And if you look closely, customer needs are not features. So for example, customer would like to, this is a product startup validator with some list of the startups that you can browse. One of the needs is find similar ideas or get constructive feedback or feel encouraged. So this is a emotional outcome for the person. What's important about it is, when we, for example, get constructive feedback, it's not, I would like to have a pop-up that is 600 pixels wide and it appears after I click some button. Yeah, I can drag and drop this window, and it has some additional filters. It's just the outcomes that customer cares about that we discovered during mapping the opportunities. Yellow cards are opportunities, customer needs that we identified during product discovery. This visible on the top is the product outcome, and there are no features. Another thing that we can see is that that we don't have any dates, it might be challenging. So, and honestly, I like it, but in most cases, I treat now as the current quarter and next, and as the next quarter, and later as everything that will be later. And also the level of details decreases over time. So it's not that we have made a product discovery for 3 quarters ahead. We have some ideas what might be our future goal, some future OKR that we're working on, but our knowledge about the future is limited. So it's less and less information. And for the later, those are only outcomes. There are even no ideas that how to achieve those outcomes.
Okay, so this is totally different from Gantt chart. Have you ever worked in the way that people really are attached to, like, I need to know, otherwise it's a failure if we don't deliver on time? And how would you say could be like an advice to someone to move on to something so vague? Because in the end, this is vague. That one is like, I know what will be delivered, I'm happy, I feel in control. Here I'm like, I have no clue what you will deliver. I don't understand. I am not in control.
Why do you need to know exact deliverables?
Because I think people think they will need probably some marketing splash, and they need to know, okay, so we need the marketing team to work ahead as well of the delivery.
Yeah, that's a good reason. Marketing might be a good reason that we some details about what needs to be, what will be released, and sometimes it needs to be synced in time, because marketing is also a question not about why but when. But in that case, I don't think marketing needs to plan anything like 6 or 9 months ahead. It's enough that they have some rough idea of what will be done. And for the things that we are working on right now, of course, we won't communicate product outcomes, because customer doesn't care that the customer satisfaction will be increased or that we will increase the activation rate. But on a very early stage, then they can communicate those needs, those problems that we addressed. So, for example, that we will our new release will allow you to get constructive feedback, that it will allow you A/B test your ideas. And you will be able to network with other users of the platform, and build meaningful relations. So I think that's a good marketing is not about features; it's about the needs and the problems that we will solve. And of course, sometimes you need some preview of the design or how the feature will look like. And you can do it after, in my opinion, after product discovery. So after you validate ideas, after you test those ideas with user prototypes, you make sure that it is viable for the business and that our developers can do it. So it's not like we can create screenshots for something that will be delivered in a year. Yeah, but I think the most important thing is that marketing should really focus on the value that we create for the customers, not how this value will be created. It's the old type of marketing that we described, that our product will in the next release we will deliver 200 features, and it's 100 more that we delivered last year, and who cares about I really care that I will be able to connect with others, for example, in this platform, and get feedback, and I don't know, A/B test something and how it will work.
Yeah, so that's also like emerging in the quarter that we are now. We probably have more information already, and we can start syncing with marketing so they can also prepare their materials based on what will actually be delivered. Just before we go, one more question that I have when it comes to, you know, communication with the stakeholders. I see the most problems arise around the communication. So if you have a good roadmap, people also know what to expect. You know, this is about communication and control. Like, I feel in control, I feel out of control, I don't know what's going on, nobody told me. And sometimes things changed, things slip. How do you make sure that they are escalated in a proper way? What's your like escalation path? Well, like, how do you tell people, like, hey, so you know, we were supposed to do this quarter, but apparently we will be working still in the next quarter.
Escalated, it already suggests that this is something wrong. I don't think that the change in the roadmap is it's something that we should always worry about. So it's natural consequence.
Well, it's like the budget, you know, people plan the budget, and the budget now is, it's double the budget, or it's like half 50% more. So those are things that, you know, depending on what comfort of company you are in, like sometimes companies are pretty comfortable. You can just slip, nothing happens. But sometimes the budgets are tight and they really want to make them work. And these things make it impossible to understand. Right?
Yeah, I understand. But let's say they create some budget. So budget is, in most cases, it's mostly people's time. At least if we are talking about software development.
It's people's time, but it's also, you know, you have something that you want to decommission, and you pay for servers, and you pay a lot. And then the servers cannot be decommissioned. So imagine it's like you hoped to stop paying and you have to pay for 3 more months. And that's a big deal.
But
something else.
Okay, did my team confirm that it can be done, or it's just someone has committed to it and informed me about it? Because commitment for me is like a promise that you cannot make others promise you something. So It's like I would say, Maria, I make you promise me that you will release our conversation tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can.
Yeah, I understand this concept, but I also understand, so, you know, that sometimes people feel that they are so pressured that they mm-hmm. just agree. Just to like, okay, just, oh, like, whatever. Yes, I'm afraid not to agree, right? So, yeah, I think this, we are talking a bit about some kind of dysfunctional communication in companies.
But I wouldn't agree on something that I'm not sure about. So it's important to communicate it openly from the very beginning, instead of, it's once again, making a bigger problem in the future for the for feeling comfortable now. And it's not the best approach for a PM. So even if someone tells you that it's important and we need to do it in 6 months because some licenses will be gone and we'll have to pay for the servers or something, I understand what you are talking to me, and we need some time for discovery. We will define how to solve this problem, and after we validate a hypothesis and validate our backlog, we can confirm that it can be done and when it can be done. They may say, I don't make promises before I have a high certainty. And of course, even if you validate your hypothesis, something unexpected might happen, because what you validate is connected to the product ideas, but there are also other risks, like some team member may get sick or might change a job, or they might be in conflict in the team. So you cannot, even if you have the best ideas and they will all work as expected, you cannot control everything what happens with the work. So in that case, it's important to, if you have promised something, it's important to communicate it as soon as the problem arises. That's the situation.
Yeah, I think it's also a lot of, you know, the complexity, like we talk about the complexity versus mm-hmm. complicated versus simple, that this tech is always complex and you can never know what will happen, right? Apart from people getting sick, you can just have some issues, mm-hmm. bugs that you never expected because you didn't know that this is connected with some other service that who knew. So yeah, I think that's also a lot of like education that's needed for those companies, where people need to understand that we just cannot know. And this is very hard.
Yeah, and it's a role for the PM. So the PM is there to communicate with the stakeholders and to make sure they understand the situation. And the worst case scenario is that PM makes this commitment that someone demands and then starts demanding it from the developers. Yeah. So it's the worst possible anti-pattern.
Well, I see that you are quite, you accepted this reality. You're pretty calm with all of this, given that it's on your shoulders, this all responsibility to make people understand this is not going to be as they wish, probably.
Even if you act in your own interest, addressing the problems before they explode in the future. So it's just to have an open communication and be transparent about what might go wrong and be transparent about the complexity that we may face. If you start making commitments because you are pressure, or making details, plans, and with dates and different deliverables that will be delivered, it feels safe, but in most cases it causes much bigger problems in the future. So it's just a wise thing to do, and not to make those commitments.
That's a good thing to think about. So thank you so much for the conversation. I think on this note we can finish, so people have a food for thought about this. And I think, you know, it's a problem in so many companies that it's great to, I wish everybody had this mindset of yours. And I think people can learn a lot from you. So thanks a lot for the talk.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
It was a pleasure. Bye.